Hey y'all, how we doing? Shout out once again to Bear Nation for tuning in to another episode of the Bear Necessities podcast. I am your host, Rob Napoli. The Bear Necessities is a podcast where we sit down with entrepreneurs, ecosystem partners, and innovation folks to talk about what it takes and means to launch, create, and scale business across the world. We talk about the journey and the challenges of being entrepreneurial-minded and how that translates into your journey, giving you the tools and knowledge to overcome challenges that you may be facing in your life's journey. The Bear Necessities is part of the Rise Up Media family. We thank you for tuning in. Now, let's get into the show. Bear Nation, how we doing? Today's episode is an absolute fun one. I had a guest on from Latvia who is a multiple startup founder who over the last year has been doing some amazing things to leading up to the launch of their business, which is coming up here on June 30th, 2022. And we covered a lot of ground here. My guest is Guillema. She has founded multiple companies in the past. Her last position was being the country manager for Citybee in Latvia, where she built the company's operations from the ground up to a fleet of 600 plus cars. Under her leadership, Citybee grew to be the company's most profitable market per car. She's an expert at B2C marketing and growth. She's a member of the Forbes 30 Under 30 list and is building a new startup in the mobility and energy field. And in this episode, we talked about kind of her entrepreneurial journey at an early age, where she failed miserably because she didn't know what she didn't know, but it set the stage for future success. She talks about her kind of YOLO mentality, her belief in herself at all times, and what she wants to accomplish in creating green sustainability through mobility with her current startup. She's done a lot of things from teaching herself how to code through the She Loves Tech program. She's doing some really cool stuff with Samsung. I'm testing out some of their products as an ambassador. She is a speaker, has been all over the place, a very impressive guest. So this episode was a lot of fun. We've been trying to get on each other's calendar for a while now, but just so much has been happening. But now the company is ready to launch with their fleet of Teslas, and tune in to hear all about what she's trying to accomplish and really some key touch points that I was excited to learn about from her as we discuss kind of her journey and what she was doing, but really understanding like what her entrepreneurial style is, which is risking big, and her faith in herself to always move forward and to make things happen. So I promise you, you're not going to be upset with this one. This was a fun episode to record. So without further ado, let's get into the episode with Guillema. Hey, everybody. We are back again for another episode of Bear Nation. Today, have a really great guest, one that we've played tag a lot trying to get on the pod as she's probably one of the busiest people I've ever met, or at least from her Instagram stories, one of the busiest people as she's actively starting. The launch date's coming up in like 13 days from the time of recording. Guillema, I think I got that right. Even though I said it right in warm-ups, I was making sure. Guillema, thank you for joining. Say what's up to Bear Nation for me.
Hi, hello everyone, and greetings from the sunny Latvia right now. It was just winter right now, so now we have summer and we are super, super excited, and I'm super, super happy to be here, and I cannot wait to kick this off.
I love it. Well, I'm really excited. There's a lot of things I want to cover with you because you've had a very unique journey over the last year. You know, you and I reached out to you because of a mutual connection. Jessica, who I met at a speaking engagement, and she was speaking in Riga for an event right before the pandemic happened. And so that's when I started, like, I knew about you. And so I reached out to you as you were going through this journey and been watching you kind of, you know, you left your former company that you were the country manager. You launched something from zero to a huge scaling. And then you had this moment of wanting to become your own entrepreneurial boss? And there has been a lot. So why don't you just before that, give us a quick like background on you. Like what's your like 2 minute story elevator pitch of a Gia?
Well, in general, it would be way more than 2 minutes. But like, I actually, my very, very first business, I think it's like a quite funny story to cover, was when I was, I think, 16 or 17. I had a friend who was already kind of like of legal age, which in Europe is starting from 18. So she was like 18 or 19. And we decided, okay, let's do a business, you know, like we are young. And at that time, so I'm right now will be 31. So that's a bit some time ago, like 12, 13 years ago. And at that time, like e-commerce was not that popular, you know, and especially e-commerce for pet food, pet toys, stuff like that. We decided, okay, let's do like a pet store.
Yeah.
Let's make an online store. Okay, let's do it. So what did we do? She was of legal age. So she took like this fast loan. You know, there are those the industry with fast loans. Yep. It's not from the bank, but it's with very bad commissions
and
interest rates. Yeah. So we took this. And at that time, it was like, I think, 400 euros. Mm-hmm. Which is sort of like a small money, you know? And then right away, we took like, we paid in for the first and last month as a rent for an office. The second thing we did, we found suppliers. We signed the agreements with suppliers. And then we sat in our office and we were thinking, okay, so we have the office, we have the suppliers, we don't even have the online store. We have no idea how to sell to someone and what to do. So I think this is like the very beginning of my entrepreneurship journey, where we just kind of like went like, okay, we have this idea, let's do, but we had no idea what to do.
Yeah.
Well, I think there is no need to say that we went into the bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And we didn't tell our parents that we took this fast loan. And in the end, we paid back like 800 euros or something like that instead of those 400. And of course, like at that time, it was not like, you know, right now you can earn money, but at that time you are receiving only some pocket money from the parents. So it was like a hard, difficult time.
Yeah.
But okay, that's just to kind of like get to understand like my personality as such, that I was more or less always like, YOLO, let's do that. And then I went through different, I had an event agency. I was doing events for different companies, for political parties, for pre-election campaigns. Then I had together with two other co-founders, like a bottled water company with which we were trying to get into the US. And we basically, we almost managed, but then the COVID hit and then it kind of like everything got dumped because all the retailers like this, forgot the name of one LA retailer. They said like, sorry, but no, we will not risk it because we don't know what will happen in the next 2 to 3 years.
Yep.
Then I have also been like a consultant for different different things. And then the last this job was at Citybee, which is like a free floating car sharing company, where you can rent a car through the phone for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 1 day, 1 month, whatever. You pay for like the time you drive plus the kilometers. And yeah, so that lasted like for 2.5, almost 3 years, where it started from zero and then we launched and grew the company to like 600 cars in the fleet.
Amazing.
So that's like a more or less short summary.
Well, that's perfect. And you know, I think I talk a lot with people that come on the show about like, when did you realize you had that entrepreneurship mentality? And right, entrepreneurship is both a job and a mentality. And for many people, they fall into it at different stages of life. And they were never thinking, I'm going to go to school to be an entrepreneur. You know, when I would, you know, I'm not much older than you, but when I was in college, like entrepreneurship wasn't like a class like it is now. Like I didn't know about entrepreneurship until 2015 when I got my master's. Right. But you at like age 16 was like, fuck it. Like let's do this. Like there's a gap in the market. Let's start something. You did it the wrong way, right? But I think that early loss, that early failure, it didn't deter you, right? You learned a lesson of like, we knew what we needed to do. We saw the gap, but we didn't realize everything that needs to be done. And a lot of founders like, oh, I have this great idea. Let's put this in the market. And they don't realize that you also have to sell in marketing and operations and set up this and set up that. And it's more than, it's so wide that you don't realize it. And that's something that takes a little bit of time to learn. And it's good that you learned it early rather than maybe say later in your life.
So. But you know, but I would say that it's better though that you don't prepare and you at least try to start doing something instead of, you know, there are a lot of those people who prepare, and they're preparing for like 3, 5 years, 10 years. And in the end, they don't start anything because they're all the time preparing and preparing for.
I know. I love that you say that. And I always say, you know, if you wait till you're perfect, it's too late. Right.
Yeah.
Because the market's passed you by. Get good out and iterate off of it. Like that's part of being in the startup space. So
yeah,
you've been in startups for a while and you've been doing this, you know, your Instagram actually has like startup life on the back end of it. How would you describe your entrepreneurial style? I know you kind of mentioned it, but if somebody asked you, yeah, how do you, what is your entrepreneurial style? What, how would you answer that question?
Okay, this is not an easy question.
No.
Well, yeah, I mentioned, of course, this YOLO. I have a bit of this mindset, so I take a lot of risks. I've always felt that I'd rather kind of like risk big and then also lose big instead of kind of like playing small and then risking that, you know, there's like a smaller upside to it. So definitely that's one of the things is the risk. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, that I've always said like, yeah, we can do that. Even though I have no idea how to do that in that moment. And then I know that I'll figure it out. I always trust myself that I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
No matter the topic, the question, I know that somehow I'll deal with it. And the third thing is I'm always ready to pay someone else to do something for me. Even if it's kind of like, you know, even if it would take from me, I don't know, 30 minutes of my time, but I know that I basically hate that thing. Mm-hmm. I will even go on Fiverr and find someone to put together like a reel on Instagram for me because, I really don't want to spend time on that.
Yeah.
So I would say those are three main things. So risk taking, I'll figure it out later. And the third one is kind of like delegate and trust someone that they will do their job better than maybe you would do that because you don't like it.
Yeah. Well, this is fire. I absolutely love this. And, you know, you said something in there too. You said that you trust yourself to get things done. And I think as an entrepreneur, that's really important. You have to trust yourself. If you don't have that internal fortitude to trust yourself, how do you make decisions? And I think that's really important. So I love that. But two, there's a book that I read. And so there's kind of two schools of thought. One, you need to learn how to do everything on your own. And there's the, you know, there's a book by Dan Sullivan called Who Not How. And I live on the intersection of this. Like I want to, and I think you are too, because you kind of try things like, yeah, you try things. And when you realize you're not good at something, bookmark that's okay. I'm not good at these three things. This is where I need to go find somebody to do it for me. And how do I delegate that out so I can focus? Because we only have so much limited brain power to use. And as a founder, as somebody who's starting a company, like you need to like focus that brain power in the right direction. So I love that you know when and how to go find people. And I think so many founders forget the power of like Fiverr and Upwork. And there are like mm-hmm. amazing VA services out there that can help you like do so much for very little. That's also very meaningful for your VA and their lifestyle and the country they're in. So I think there's so many times that entrepreneurs forget the tools at our disposal if you only take a second to step back and look for them. So I love this, this entrepreneurial style of yours.
But I would, of course, I would like to add that, of course, there are times, you know, like sometimes people also have asked me about this topic that, of course, if you're in the very, very, very early beginning and you're on a very, very tight budget, of course, you will do it all on your own. And of course, you will not pay anyone. But there is this kind of like that sometimes people go over that. Yeah. They start earning money. They actually could pay someone else, but they kind of like are afraid of this small downside that for a moment they will have less money, but in the long term they will get more money. So they get stuck in this.
Sometimes you got to spend money to make money. And also too, like the other side of that for me anyways, and I've done this before, I've, you know, paid others to help me out, is that if they're taking off 2 to 3 hours off my plate, that's 2 to 3 hours that maybe I do a side consulting job that can triple that money that easily pays for them and adds an infusion of cash into my business. Or it's 3 hours that I can go focus on business development for my business and go bring in the next deal, which, you know what I mean? Like, it depends. You got to think about, like, what is that taking off your plate and what is that giving you back, right? Like, if you're paying somebody else to do something and then you're going to go fuck off and have a beer, like, of course, you're just like, you're not maximizing that potential on either side of the coin. You know what I mean?
Well, but you know, I would actually a bit challenge that, because I'm not saying like, yeah, about drinking beer, but sometimes, well, right now we know that it's like a hustle culture and it's very hard. So sometimes it's actually that you need that time for your mental health. You maybe need to just recharge and really just, I don't know, lay in your bed and watch Netflix. But of course, you have to recognize when it's becoming a pattern. If it's like a pattern and you do it like every other day, it means that it's not recharging or it's not good for your mental health. But if it's, of course, like, I don't know, once in some period of time that you just want to lay in bed and watch Netflix, I think then it's also kind of like good and fine, because you need to kind of like, recharge.
100%. I think everybody needs those recharge days. And for me, it's actually Fridays. So we're recording on Friday. Yeah. So every Friday afternoon, I don't schedule meetings after 1 o'clock. Many times Friday afternoons actually aren't even like working afternoons. Like, it's my day to like go to the gym, go run errands, maybe I'll go to a coffee shop, you know, do some content creation, have some fun doing some other stuff. And then I work. What I do is I get up on Sunday morning with a pot of coffee and I clear out my inbox and I do plans for the week and stuff like that. So like, I almost every Friday afternoon from about 2 o'clock on, I'm not working, because that's my, that's my 4 hours to recharge at the end of the week. I'm not going to be productive. And then I use Sunday morning, because my wife always sleeps in on Sunday mornings. And I for whatever reasons, I can sleep in on Saturdays, but I cannot sleep in on Sundays. Like, I just wake up Sunday at like 7 o'clock so I just make a pot of coffee and like put some music on and I'll work for 2 hours and then, you know, get up and go about my day, which is completely weird. And I don't always love it, because if we go out Saturday night, Sunday morning, I'll wake up at 7. Yeah. And if it's a late night, waking up early, it's not good. But
well, but you see, I also think it's like when you plan those things that now it will be your time, just kind of like your time for your other things. Yeah. Then you also don't feel bad about them. Yeah. Very often, I think people feel bad about, oh, I cannot take kind of like free time for myself. But if you plan it, then it's kind of like in your schedule, and then it's kind of like less of this worrying about, oh my gosh, I have like emails to answer and yada, yada.
So I love, you made a great point there. And this is something I talk to people about all the time. And I have a very unique schedule. So I work a lot with Europe. So from about 7 a.m. till noon is like my Europeans, like work only. And then I go to the gym. I block off from 12 to 2 and I go to the gym, blah, blah, blah. And then I work my US stuff. And everyone's like, oh, how can you afford to take 2 hour lunches? Well, it's because I plan it, right? Like, I make sure that I set those expectations. And so many people are scared to do that. So I want to ask you, because you do a lot of things and we haven't got into like what you're about to launch. But in the last, let's say, year or so, prior to COVID, you also were a speaker at a lot of events. You started doing different kind of workouts and testing yourself, dance, riding horses. You did She Loves Tech and learned how to code. What else did you do? You started doing some partnerships with Samsung testing. You're a Forbes 30 Under 30 member. How do you handle all of this stuff? Also launching a startup, like, how do you handle your work life? Like, what is work-life balance to you? And how do you manage these things that you're not burning yourself out and you're actually able to enjoy your life and the experiences that go along with it?
Well, I think it will sound very silly and maybe not too kind of like creative and original, but I just love it. I love everything I do. So it comes more or less easy. So sometimes I do have like super long days, you know, like, yeah, starting from 6 a.m. and then going until, I don't know, like midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m. But it's not like it's not happening every day. So I also, like you, for example, I don't have like specific that I have like lunchtime, let's say from 12 to 2 p.m. I know that I have trainings in the evenings. Mm-hmm. And for example, also today, I have a training at 5 p.m. and it goes until 6:15. And after that, I'll actually come back to work because tonight we need to check for our warehouse. We need to install the charging stations mm-hmm. in the warehouse. So I'll just come back and then I'll finish everything. But I also do like you that I plan those other things that are for myself, not only for the business. And in general, kind of like maybe I don't have that specific schedule, meaning that I don't plan like deep work. I know it's kind of like very suggested that you plan deep work. I tried that and I saw that it doesn't work for me. I'm more of a person who prefers to live in a flow. I like that things change and I don't like routine. I don't like that something is the same and that I know that, oh, that let's say every day from this and that time, I work like this is my deep work time. Mm. So that's why, for example, if there's coming like in like a new partnership or some other project, then I schedule accordingly. But I basically, I'm in a flow. I know that I have priorities. So the priorities have to go first. And then I'll squeeze in something. If there's like a speaking gig or something like that, I'll just, put it in. But yeah, I would say the only thing that's really cut in stone for me in the schedule is only my sports trainings because those I cannot adjust as I wish because those are always trainers and they kind of like set the schedule. But for everything else, more or less, yeah, I try to kind of like live in a flow because I really love that. I love that. For example, I wake up and then if there are no meetings, like meetings are also, then they're cut in stone. If there are no meetings, then I more or less train like, okay, today, this is the priority. This is the priority. I'll do them first. And then I'll do whichever task I feel more kind of like drawn to that day, except for like something like now, as we are launching in like, yeah, those 12 or 13 days. Then of course, like, it doesn't matter. What do I want? We have like a lot of stuff to be done until the launch. And then it's kind of like, yeah, nothing matters. You just do everything like one by one, one by one, one by one.
Yeah. Well, I love that. And like, I'm, you know, I train people on the deep work, like methodology, actually. But for me, I'm similar to you in the fact that if I have 3 hour, 4 hour block in my calendar with nothing, I'm not like, I'm going to procrastinate and not get anything done. So like, I need to like kind of do certain things and like build certain things into my like structure of flow. So like, if I have a 4 hour block, what I'll do is like, I'll call up all my friends until somebody's like, hey, you know, yeah, you want to do a coffee like 8 a.m. Thursday morning? And it's just like a 30 minutes just that I have a conversation that's going to spark a creativity zone so that then I can go into a flow state. So if I like try to do it on my own, like I'll get distracted. I'll have dishes. I'll have this to do, or, you know, I'll start like going on and looking at content and getting into LinkedIn funnels. But like, if I just know that I have too much time, I just call everybody in my book until somebody has a coffee with me or a call. 15, 20 minutes. It's not like, let's talk for an hour. That's not waste of time. It's like, hey, how you doing? Like, I'll usually have a specific question in mind for the people I'm like reaching out to that will spark a train that will allow me to go be productive on the tasks that I need to get done. Because I'm similar to you.
Okay.
I need to be in a flow state to work. I can't just focus. I have ADHD and OCD. So it comes to problem if that's the case. But I love that you're kind of talking about flow state. I think it's also important because everybody right now talks about, you know, routinizing their life. And I think it's important to have routines. As people, we do better with routines, but you need to allow for flexibility. If you don't have any flexibility in your schedule, then you tend to lose out on a lot of the things that will bring you joy. Right. I don't mean joy of just like pure happiness. Joy could be things that are a new skill, a new lesson, a new experience that could be good or bad, right? So,
really interesting. Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, this episode is going to drop next Thursday. So we're talking here on Friday the 17th. It drops next Thursday, which is about 4 days before the launch of the new company. Tell us about what you're building. And I know there's been some challenges leading up to it that I want to ask about, but tell me, like, why don't you tell me what you're building and what you're launching? Cause I've been seeing some really cool stuff on your Instagram story as the launch is about to happen. So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about what you're building and why you chose to build it.
Okay, so yeah, on June 30th in Latvia, there will be a new free floating car sharing, which will be on Teslas and only on Teslas. We will start with the Tesla Model 3. We will have standard range, long range, and performance as well. And then, of course, we will also move and buy Model Y, Model S, and then hopefully also Model X. So that's one of the biggest thing that we will start. The first one, it's car sharing where anyone can, you can download that. And the cars will be like, maybe I'll also explain more free floating, because I think in the US, there used to be like a free floating car sharing, but I think it's not that common. No, it's actually. So free floating.
Yeah.
So free floating basically means that the cars that are owned by us, they are in different spots in the city. For example, they might be on one street, then 10 meters away, there's another car, then on the other block, there's another car. So basically they are everywhere around the city. And when you take the car, for example, from a point A, then you can drop it off at any point within the zone. And for example, for us, the zone is basically the borders of the city. So you can drive even to the other side of Europe. But in order to finish the trip, to finish your ride and pay for the rent, you have to come back and place the car somewhere inside this this area. So that's free floating, which is super flexible, and it's very, very kind of like futuristic, if I may say so, because in the future it's predicted that at some moment people will just kind of like drop private cars in Europe. I'm talking about more Europe right now, and they will start using car sharing because you really don't need the private car, because you have to pay for everything with the private car, also for the parkings and everything else. So with this, with car sharing as such, everything is included. You have this one price that you pay for the rent, but parking is for free. Fuel is for free. In our case, it's electricity. So everything is included. We are right now preparing like a bunch of Teslas. There are IoT devices that are going inside the cars. There's the software and everything that needs to be set up. And then there are, of course, payment gateways and also the verification gateways, because when you're downloading the app and registering, then you're uploading your driver's license, and the AI needs to check if it's kind of like legit, valid, and if you are actually the person whose driver's license you have uploaded. So that has to be checked. And then, of course, all the marketing plans, launch event, we will have, like a launch party with many, many people and different musical performances, dance performances, even like stand-up comedians and stuff like that. And then after the car sharing, we will also move to subscription. So basically you can have Tesla as a subscription. Model, for example, you don't want to buy a Tesla, and you also don't want to kind of like use car sharing, because then you kind of like every time you have to open the app and look for the car, you sort of want something like a mix, like between those two things, then you get the subscription. Also, we will sell Teslas, we will build charging stations, we'll create like a charging station infrastructure. So we want to be the biggest ones, at least in this region. And then maybe move outside of this region as well. We will see how it will come together. And then, of course, in general, we want to move into this alternative energy sector. We would love to become this super app, which is for all things alternative energy. So that's like our big vision. But on June 30th, the Tesla car sharing
drops. That's amazing. I think that's an amazing kind of plan to build out, right? Like, you don't know what's going to happen, but you have ideas of where it can go. And I love this idea. You know, we don't, the free floating car service, there's a little bit here and there in pockets of the US. In New York, there's free floating scooters, like kind of like a Vespa scooter with Revel, which I love because it's like the easiest way to get around. It's super convenient. But I think, you know, as you said, in the US, it's a little bit different. In terms of like not as many cities have the public transportation infrastructure that Europe has. So it makes sense how this works. But I also love like the subscription. There's a lot of things that I think is really cool with that. You know, I know that the big question, especially in the US, and something that needs to be solved, and it sounds like you're looking at this, is that especially the US infrastructure is not set up for private electric vehicles, right? Like the power grid in residential areas isn't strong for that. And there needs to be a lot of changes. And that's something that you're building charging stations and you're looking at. How are you kind of tackling that challenge right now and looking at how do we create and make sure that there's the infrastructure in the city, in the zone to build this out? How has that challenge been looked at?
So that's actually a very good question, because of course we are starting with the car sharing and then we will build the infrastructure on our own afterwards. So right now we will survive with the one which is provided by the city and also by several private companies who have built them out. But of course we see that it's not sufficient, which is why right now before the launch we will build several charging stations inside our warehouse so that we can bring in the cars during the night and just charge them up. And then also use the infrastructure that is already in the city. I would say like at least in Riga, which is the capital city of Latvia, it's not that bad. It's kind of like it could be way better, but it's not that bad. In general, if you have an EV, then you can quite easily find a charging station. Of course, you have to still kind of like open the app and maybe check like, okay, which is the closest one, but you can still find it. But still, right now we will launch like with what, like 40, 50 cars. And so it's fine. But by the end of this year, we will have definitely at least 150 Teslas, which is like minimum. And then next year, we will definitely have around like 300, 400. Yeah. And then when we reach that amount of cars, then literally there is not enough charging stations in the city. And in that moment, we understand that we could end up, you know, just having cars that are like at 5% battery, just standing on the streets because they cannot be driven and there are no charging stations to actually use. And so we are just now starting cooperate with the different suppliers and manufacturers who can build the stations for us, because of course we will not manufacture and produce them ourselves. So we will partner up with companies who do, and but we will build our own app so that basically, for example, when you open our app, then you can have the car sharing, but also you can charge your own private vehicle at our charging stations. And then, of course, there is this challenge that you said, like also for residential areas. It's everywhere that, of course, because of the grid, it's not always that easy. So it's the same thing also in Riga, that not that easy to actually get the power. For example, you say, I want the station right here, but it's just that you cannot get the power. So still, we have to somehow work around, because those are usually the residential areas are quite old, at least in Europe. Yeah. They're like super, super old. So you would have to kind of like demolish almost everything in order to get the power. But we will try to, we don't have like very specific solutions for every case, but at least we have started the talks and discussions with potential partners who will help us to
I think that's kind of what I was getting at, because like that's a big topic of conversation here, and my average response is like, it's not feasible today. That doesn't mean that we have fucking some of the smartest minds in the world. We have generations of people who grew up on in the hyper enlightened age, so we have really smart minds that we need to start the discussion. And until we not only start the discussion and develop that, then we can start figuring out solutions. The fact that you're already thinking about this and starting these discussions puts you ahead of the curve and opening up conversations, I think, in the global economy to talk about global mobility and EVs and how that can change. Sure. And maybe it's not ever going to be full EV, but a hybrid model that reduces carbon emissions. There's so much that can happen out of that conversation in like even fleets. Like New York has Revel, which is the free floating scooter app. Revel launched their own car service only in Manhattan, but it's all Teslas. And you know, they have a charging station in Brooklyn, and they're working on some, you know, different charging station ideas around New York City. So I think that the conversations are happening and needing to be happening. And so it's awesome that you're at the forefront of that. I think it's cool. I mean, at least from a US perspective, you don't think about the Baltics as much, even though like I know the Baltics well from a few organizations I've worked with. There's a lot of really cool things happening. And, you know, I think at times we need to be able to turn to Latvia and the Baltics, say, hey, like, what are they doing? in some of these smaller areas in this part of the world that we can expand upon and learn from. So I think you're just setting yourself up to be quite a force to be reckoned with. And I'm excited to see what happens with the company. And what's the name of the company?
So it will be Ox Drive, you know, like the bowl, but it's not supposed to be the bowl. It's just, it's all together like oxytocin, bowl, everything came together and it's kind of like thought like, okay, Ox sounds cool. And then we will have like Ox Drive, Ox Charge. And, you know, like we will just add the thing that we will do at that moment. But yeah, we, of course, like mentioning, going back to your point about the Baltics and the US, but we, of course, hope that once we will figure it out here, then we would definitely want to expand also to the US. We have already started actually talking with some of potential partners. We started in with one VC fund from Austin that maybe we could also figure out how and with which of our kind of like projects we could start in the US. So definitely, and hopefully we will also meet in the US.
Yeah, I have a feeling that it'll take some time. It'll be quicker than anybody thinks. So I'm excited to see what that conversation looks like and what that can mean for your company. I know it's you put a lot into it, you and your team. And how big is your team right now? Let's talk about just quickly. I want to give a shout out. I know it's not just you. There's a team and I've seen it. So tell me a little bit like what your team looks like today as we go into the launch.
So we have four, we are four co-founders, we all are actually classmates or course mates from our university. Two of us, we were like in 1 year, and then the other two guys, they were in 1 year, they started 1 year later. So we are four, but we are quite different. So it's me, I'm more like, you know, experience with car sharing and marketing branding. And then we have Juhan Karma, who is, he's actually Estonian. So he's living in Latvia already for, I think, like 10 years or something. He married a Latvian girl. So he's super experienced in startup world. He has, I think he had only two startups that he successfully exited and sold. For him, kind of like fundraising is his area of genius and zone of genius. And also customer support. He's the genius who is buying the cars and managing, because you know that at the moment it's very hard to actually get the cars everywhere around the world. Then we have Christian Karlsons. He is our basically tech AI guy, also operations. He has been living in the US, I think, for like a year or year and a half. He was working together with this plug and play accelerator. I think most probably you know them. Yeah. So he was with them in the US for a year and a half. Then he moved to, I think, Amsterdam. Then he was with them also in Amsterdam looking for other startups. But he's really from this business tech world. And then we have Christos Vasilios, and he is like a finance guru. That in car sharing, it's really, really also important that you actually have, like, you know, someone who pays attention to the smallest cent. Because if, for example, I'm quite this, you know, like YOLO, then definitely there needs to be someone who kind of like can count everything and knows exactly how to do this and manage that. So we are quite different. And at the same time, we share the same ambition. We share the same values. We are all passionate about like green mobility, sustainability as such, and that we want to kind of like change the world in general, at least kind of like, you know, change the world sounds like very big words, but even like if changing the world for a few people, then it's kind of like worth for us. So right now we are four, and then most probably we'll start hiring people a bit later. Right now we are trying to actually do everything as much as we can on our own, just to learn all the details of the business, you know, like also when we will now start the car sharing, then we also want to go and change tires if needed, just to kind of like see everything that needs to be done. So that, for example, when you are hiring like a fleet manager who will do that, you can actually kind of like tell him, okay, do this or that, or maybe experiment with some new thing. And you know, if he comes to you and complains or tells something, then you know if it's kind of like more or less legit or not, because you have been there, you have done that, and you have seen it. So yeah, that's the story. That's amazing.
I'm excited. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, when I talk about founders and founder journeys, and, you know, it's important that it's not always one. Sometimes it takes a team and, you know, a unique set of people, and finding a team is hard. Like my co-founder, well, former co-founder from the company that Phil and I sold Happday Group, we did an episode on why it worked. And we see so many, I've worked with 500 startups in the last couple of years. And I can tell when I meet like founders together, my co-founders, if it's going to work or not based on like the energy and the conversation and the backgrounds and the skills. And I think it's really important that you know, you have trust in your team and you bring people around you that you believe in, that you have similar ideology on things, but you also are different in skills. So you can challenge each other. That's really, really important. Mm-hmm. So it's cool that you got to break that out and you know, I know Launch Date's not there yet, but big props to you and your team for the launch party. And I can't wait to see pictures from it, and kind of jealous that I'm, you know, I wish I was like a hop, skip and a jump away and get on a plane and come to that party. It sounds like a blast with musical acts and comedians. Like that's going to be the party of the year for your launch. So.
Yeah. If you would be somewhere in Europe, I guess it would be really easy just to come. Yeah. And
unfortunately,
enjoy.
I'll be in Europe in July and September. So I'm actually going to be in Dublin, in Galway in July for a buddy's wedding. And then I'm going to Greece, Santorini for another friend's wedding. And then after that, I'm going to Sweden, up to the Umea region in Sweden to visit one of the accelerators that I work for, called Umanova Innovation. So,
but wait. If you're going to Sweden, like Latvia is literally like 1 hour flight away. So if you have time, then come and visit. We will give you a Tesla for a day and
I'm gonna finalize my schedule and let you know, because like that could be pretty cool if I could if I could swing that. So I'll let you know. Oh man, this is fun. So I know we're getting to the end of the time here, and I want to ask a couple of kind of final questions. And one of them, it was my favorite question to ask people, is for especially founders, what is your superpower? What do you think your superpower is?
Oh, superpower. Well, if I would have to choose one, only one superpower, then I would choose, I think the same thing that I mentioned before, this trust in myself, that basically wherever I go, whatever I do, even I might be afraid of it and kind of like stressed out, but still I will always bet on myself. I will still kind of like trust that I can pull it off, even though I will kind of like doubt myself at the same time. Deep down, I'll still kind of like say that, no, you will do it. You can do it. Even if it will be a crap in the end. Well, you did it anyway, even if it was bad, but you can still do it. So I would say that's the superpower that drives me every single day.
I love it. I love it. And I wish we had more time, because that level of energy and trust in yourself, you know, even when you're not always sure, is really huge. And that gets into a bigger topic of imposter syndrome. And I just recorded a podcast where I talked about this, where I was a guest. And I think it's so important that you're not going to know everything. You're not always going to be right. But I think younger generations don't always understand this in this like super digital age, but you have to fail in order to learn. Right. Oh, and it's like, you have to trust yourself to make a decision. And sometimes you're going to make the wrong decision, but that's okay. That's a lesson learned, right? You either succeed or you learn versus you succeed or fail. And so I love that kind of as a superpower, because that's, you know, as we talked about your background, we didn't even get into some of the other cool stuff with the She Loves Tech and all the shit that you've like put yourself through. It's the reason I think you can sustain all the activities, because it drives you to a bigger place, and that falls into you just being passionate about it. And when you're passionate about it, it just makes an amazing experience.
Yeah. But so, if I can add one last sentence just to end this, then you mentioned this, that people are very often kind of like, they don't understand this failure part. I think that why very often people avoid failure is not because they're afraid of the failure. They're afraid of what other people will think of them when they fail. And that's something that if we understand and it can change that, then I think it shifts the whole world for you.
It does. And so if somebody came to you and said, you know, I'm really afraid of what people would think if I fail. What would you say? What advice would you give somebody that said that to you?
Well, we will all die and no one will even remember that you existed. So why not just kind of like try everything you can, because the upside is way bigger than the downside. And trust me, people don't think about you as much as you think. And recently I was actually doing this firewalk thing and we had this instructor who said in the beginning, so the main thing is make a decision. Even if you decide not to do it, not to kind of like go over the fire, it's fine. Just make the decision. And remember, no one will even notice that you kind of like didn't do it. And I thought to myself like, what? How can I not notice who didn't walk on the fire? And then the event came. So we did all this walking on the fire. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, everyone did it. And then I realized that kind of like I got to know that actually 30% didn't walk over the fire. I didn't notice that. Mm-hmm. I just didn't notice because we're all absorbed with ourselves. We care about ourselves. So we actually don't pay that much attention to others as we like to believe that other people are all the time watching and looking at us.
I love it. And that's something that it took me a long time to learn as well, that no mm-hmm. one's paying attention to me as much as I think, even because I have a decent size following. I'm like some big influencer, whatever. And I don't love, like I wrote a book about, I hate the word influencer, right? But you know, our audiences and people that follow us, they follow us for a reason. And you know, they follow us because we're authentic. We show our true selves and that's important. And so they're going to see that and respect that, but they're not waiting for you to fail. They're not, you know, there's always keyboard warriors. There's always shit. You got to like put that out. But you made a point that we're all going to die. And no one's going to really remember you. Well, if you want to be remembered, you have to take risks to make positive change and impact. So if you're afraid of what people are going to think if you fail and you don't do it, you're never going to be remembered at all. So you really need to just put yourself out there and fuck, you only get one life. You only get one crack at this thing that we call life. Like, why not take a chance? And if you fail, you fail, but you did it. At least you could say you tried. And that's way more impressive than what most people do and don't try. So I love that.
Yep. I love mic that. Drop.
Yeah. We're just going to end it there. How do my listeners find you if they want to follow along with you? And for Bear Nation out there listening, you should definitely follow her. She's got some amazing content and she's doing some really cool things. You. So how do my listeners find you and get in touch and also follow along to the business as you launch?
So I think the most active I'm on Instagram and on LinkedIn, those two places. So basically, I guess no one will remember my name, but it's Egiya on Instagram. It's E-G-I-I. And then it's L-U-M-A, but I guess it's kind of like you will find it right away. And on LinkedIn, of course, like mm-hmm. first name and last name, but I guess that they can find afterwards as they will not remember just by saying it.
I'll link it down in the, I'll link it in the show notes so that it's really easy for them to find you. But LinkedIn, Instagram, take a look. And then, do y'all have a company website?
Yes. We
out there yet?
Yeah. It's oxdrive.lv.
Okay. I'll make sure that's in there as well. Cause, if anyone wants to follow along to the launch, and if you're in the area, by the time this episode drops, you'll still have a couple weeks before the launch party. So, if you want to get in touch and try to go to that launch party, highly suggest it. Thank you so much for being a part of Bear Nation. I've loved having you on and getting to finally chat with you, for a length of time. That's super meaningful. So appreciate you sharing your insights and being on the show today.
Thank you, Rob, and thank you to your community. Really, it was an honor to be here, really.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it. Bear Nation, thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure that you go rate it, like it, give it 5 stars, do all those things, subscribe. It's super impactful for me. And until next episode, stay well and rise up, y'all. Bear Nation, once again, thank you for tuning in and listening to the Bear Necessities podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe. Leave us a review. It really does help and means a lot to us at the show. And I want to thank our friends over at Finn. Finn is a social good platform that creates employee engagement and builds culture. It's our mission to support and give back to the communities that we serve around the world. And we do this by giving every guest on our show a $10 donation to the cause of their choosing using the Finn platform. Until next time, thank y'all. Stay well and rise up.